This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporter with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Jordan's Furniture, Aruba Tourism Authority, NY World Class Mart, New England Regional Council of Carpenters, Cameron Aruba All Inclusive Resort, Rodenizer Plumbing, Heating, AC and Electric, JetBlue, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Advanced Auto Parts, Brennan Smoke Shop, U.S. Marker Board, Boston Volkswagen, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers, Boxwoods Resort Casino, Jackson Lumber, and Mass General Cancer Center. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hi, welcome into the Baseball Reporters. Believe it or not, we have a lot to get to tonight, which you would never think on the fourth day of the All-Star break. When did they go to 4 days on this thing? This was stupid.
It used to all begin again on Thursday, today.
So there is one game tonight. I think the Indians play tonight. I can't remember who they play against.
It's the Rangers and the Astros.
Oh, right, the Rangers and the Astros. I'm sorry. You know why I thought the Indians? For some reason, I had Michael Brantley on the brain. Brantley's not with the Astros. He's not with the Indians anymore. In any case, 617-779-0985. We're going to get to a couple things in the program. First of all, robot umpires. Robot umpires. I'll read you this story from the Washington Post about an experiment, for lack of a better word, that took place in the Atlantic League regarding automated balls and strikes. Automated balls and strikes. We'll do that a little bit later in the show, but if you have thoughts on it, certainly we'll take your thoughts. Again, 617-779-0985. It's a good night to jump in if you've tried to call the program in the past and haven't been able to get through. And also, secondly, we'll get to the Jake Marisnik story. He has been suspended by Major League Baseball after that vicious collision with Jonathan Lucroy of the Angels on Sunday in the finale of the first half between those teams. A lot of people thought Marisnik should have got more than a couple of games. We'll get to that. But I do want to start with the Red Sox. The Red Sox, as you know, Marshall Hook, who's filling in for Jim Murray tonight. The Red Sox began the season 6-13. And we all lamented we wondered how a start like that could really affect the team in the long run. And give you all kinds of numbers about teams that started that badly. If they finished April with a losing record, if they were five games under, et cetera, and whether or not they made the playoffs, and the overwhelming odds were that teams like that do not make the playoffs. Then the Red Sox began to play better. And at one point, actually, Marshall, they rattled off, I can't even guess here, 8 out of 9, I think it was, maybe even more than that, 11 out of 13, and they got back to 22-19. So the Red Sox, after starting 6-13, got to 22-19. They were within three games of first place in the American League East on May 12th. In your mind, Marshall, does that negate the bad start?
No.
Okay, why not?
Just because, you know, I don't like the kind of, I don't know what you call it, dual personality of the play. And so I like to look at it more, if they'd played a little bit better in the beginning, where would they be? I mean, they are still so far behind the Yankees. They are still on the outside looking in the wild card, and none of that should be true, and I blame that all on the beginning of the season. So ultimately, I say, sure, they played better, so the beginning of the season isn't as bad, or they've recovered. But no, ultimately, they should be in a better place than they are, and they're not, because they say they played so poorly to start the year.
Okay, so there were a bunch of people at that time, and again, it was May 12th or thereabouts, where they went on a little streak. Okay, they were 11-17. They get to 11-17 at one point, and then the next thing you know, they are 22-19. So they literally went 11-2 over a 13-game stretch, and they got themselves three games above 500. They were within three games of first place. All of a sudden, they're right back in it. And I remember this at the time. I remember people saying the Red Sox have erased their bad start, and they're back where they should be, 41 games in. By the quarter-mile pole, the Red Sox were right back where they needed to be. And I looked at it just like you do, Marshall. I said, no. This is not true. They had to go 11-2 over a 13-game stretch basically to get back to 500. That's what they had to do. And you know what usually happens after a team goes 11-2, Marshall?
they do worse than that.
They start losing again. They start losing again. That's usually what happens, which is exactly what happened to the Red Sox. So they immediately lost 3 out of 4. And then shortly thereafter, they had another stretch and they ended up at 29-29. So they went right back the other way. The point being is this. People were so eager to get on the critics for the Red Sox when they started the year badly. They were so eager to jump on them when the team started playing better that they said, see, they erased the bad start. See? Now here we are mid-season, past mid-season, 90 games in, and the Red Sox are still out of the playoffs. They did not overcome the bad start. I said this at that particular time, too. That if they end up missing the playoffs, or they, you know, heaven forbid, which none of us thought would happen, but if they end up missing, you know what we're all going to do? We're going to look back at that 6-13 start and say, well, if they had started better, they might have made it. If they had just played 500 during that stretch and gone 10-9, they'd have been way better off. And maybe they wouldn't have had to expend the energy that they spent to get back to 500. You know what J.D. Martinez said at the All-Star break? J.D. Martinez said, oh, man, this season, the first half has been a grind. I mean, just, you know, this is what happened. Last year, we didn't have adversity. This year, we had some out of the gate, and that takes its toll. It just wears you down. When did that stuff happen, Marshall? Right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Right out of the gate. Go ahead. Anyway.
I mean, you and I have been around this block countless times where we talk about April performance, or in any sport, early season performance, right? And then you hear from people, oh, come on, in the case of baseball, it's only April. Geez, can't write them off already. And then you say something like, well, a win counts in April as much as it does in September. And that sounds like a silly kind of platitude, but it's true. Like, the hole they dug themselves in April is as much a hole as that team in whatever year it was, 2012, that, you know, fell apart in September. The wins, or in this case, the losses, when they pile up, whether it be in April or whether it be in September, may have a different kind of mental image to it. Like, it feels like, oh, well, they got off to a rough start, but they're a great team now, versus that, and I think it was 2012 where they collapsed down the stretch in September, but whatever year it was, like, oh, well, you know, they were such a great team and they choked and fell apart at the end. In the end, it's just the accumulation of losses, and it is a missed opportunity. It doesn't matter to me whether those losses come in April, like it did this year, or it is seen as a collapse because it happened at the end of the year. Regardless, it's an opportunity missed because you didn't win games when you should have.
Yeah, I'm a believer. I mean, the thing is, people mix that up in the regular season, right? In the regular season, a sport like baseball, every one of those games matters. Every single one. And the fact is, the Red Sox weren't ready to start the season. So that 6-13, oh, you bet your ass it's still biting them. It's absolutely still biting them. It's taken a big chunk out of them is what it did. And I always equate it to this. When you start out the way the Red Sox did, you know what it does to you? You end up running uphill the whole season. That's what happens. You end up running uphill right out of the gate. And if you have to run uphill for 6 months, you know what happens by the end of it? You're fried. You're fried. You've been running uphill the whole time. Now compare it to last year when the Red Sox got to a 17-2 start, and by the converse approach or the converse theory, now they're running downhill all year. And so if they lose a few in a row, no big deal. We're in a good spot. I believe in fast starts, strong finishes. I always have. And in fact, I may even throw out the strong finish part, because if you get off to a fast start and you're running downhill the whole way, you don't have to finish strong. You're so far in front, it really doesn't matter. And in the case of the 2018 Red Sox, that's what happened. They got off to such a great start and then beat the Yankees in early to mid-August. If you remember, they really kicked the crap out of them. They had like a 9-game lead with a month and a half to go. It was over. It was over. So now, let's use the flip side. The Yankees, they're up, what, 9 now?
9, 11? I believe.
Yeah. Is the division over, Marshall?
Oh, yeah, it is.
So I think so, too. Now, I don't know. Maybe Tampa could catch the Yankees, although they're a good distance back, too.
6.5 back of the Yankees. The Red Sox back 9.
The Yankees have a cushion. They can run downhill. It's not going to be as stressful for them down the stretch.
And it really is a mental thing, right? Because
totally.
To your point, you're sitting there and, you know, just choose a point in the middle of the season, June. We lose three games in a row. For this Red Sox team this year, that's killer. Like, we're starting to make progress. We're starting to erase that. Oh, we lost three in a row. It's like we lost this moment. Now we've got to build it back up. Last year's Red Sox, we lost three in a row. Who cares? Whatever.
No,
we're still up nine. We're still up seven.
It's like compounding interest, Marshall, except in the reverse. The defeats compound. They get harder later in the year. And so when you have that bad foundation, now they get worse. Jason's in a car. Jason, go.
Hey, guys. Bear with me while I do some math here. But in my mind, you know, the beginning of the season, if they had gone 11-8, which is reasonable, or even 10-9, they'd be about 18 games above 500 right now. That just means you play 500 ball and you won 90 games.
Correct.
But now they're 8 games above 500. They got to get 10 more above 500 to get to 90. Those games matter so much in the beginning of the season, and people just don't realize it. I was going to call early in April and talk about that.
Yeah,
it really does.
Jason, people completely underestimate how important the start of the year is. And again, look, use any analogy you want. There are a million of them. So there's that old expression with the golf tournament. You can't win it on the first day. Oh, but you can lose it. You can lose it on the first day. I would tell you the same with the baseball season. You can't win it in April, but you can blow it then. Ed's in Whitman. Go ahead, Ed.
Hey, how's it going, Tony? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm not the first person to say this, you know, that I just feel like they were unprepared, you know, unwilling, or whatever you want to say for when the season started. But I think that one of the big points is that it started from the manager down, and I'm paraphrasing. I don't know the exact verbiage he used, but it was something like, no, we don't have to turn the page. We keep the page going or whatever. And that's just so different than you hear any coach or anyone when you're starting a new season. It's, no, now it's the new season. We forget about the past. But it just seemed like they were celebrating themselves into the beginning of the year, and that's what put them in the hole.
Ed, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, that part's on Cora. Cora didn't have him ready to go to start the year, and your paraphrasing of it was pretty accurate. You got it right. I'm not sure we want to turn the page, is what Cora said. And so you know what the Red Sox did? They didn't turn the page. They tried to just play like they had already won something that they did at the end of 2018, and it really did. It bit them in the ass. Big time. So now, look, we've had people call this show this year, fire Alex Cora. No, let's not get stupid. But Cora's had a reality check. He's had a bad year so far. The team wasn't ready to go. So Cora could do nothing wrong in 2018. This year, right out of the gate, he made a big mistake. Big one. So I just get amused that people were so quick to write off that bad start early on. That one bugged me because it was like, oh, yeah, see? So what, the 6-13 never happened? They erased it? They're still chasing. They've been chasing out of the gate from the very first game. From day one, they've been chasing. And they never really caught up. Now, maybe they will here in the second half, but boy, that bad start, it took a lot out of them. Marshall, quickly.
Yeah.
Robot umpires, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Thumbs up now.
Thumbs up now. We'll explain more into that story when we come back and continue with your phone calls.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
In case you missed it, a robot umpire debuted last night in the independent leagues. I'm going to get to the particulars on it in a minute. I see Jay in Grafton already wants to talk about it. We'll get to him in 1 second. I do want to take Dan in a car, though, and hopefully Eric in Phoenix as well on the Red Sox first. Dan in the car, go.
Tony, I agree they dug a hole, and it seemed like there were a couple times during the season where they were trying to dig themselves out. You mentioned the first run, they had a couple other runs, and then they blow saves, and then they blow another save, and they blow an 18, and it's like they completely take the wind right out of their sails, and they just can't get out of that hole.
So, Dan, look, if your ultimate point is that the bullpen is a factor, too, I totally agree. I mean, nobody would discount that. And all I'm getting at is that in the middle of May, and I remember it because it bugged me, it bugged the crap out of me, that people were very quick to write off the bad start. You know, they got to 22-19. They were three over. They were three games out, 41 games in. Everyone said, see, they're out of it. It's over. And I said, no, they're not out of it. Because this idea that all of a sudden 22-19 was okay was wrong. If they had played better in the early part of the year, maybe instead of being 22-19, they'd have been 27-14. I don't know. I'm just throwing numbers at you. But whatever energy they had to expend getting out of the 6-13 cost them something. Because then immediately they started losing again, and now they were 29-29 after 58. Something like that losing streak at the beginning of the year, that compounds itself. Not to mention the fact that, again, let's not take the human element out of it. We're talking about human beings. So you know what happens when you get off to a good start, 17-2? Hey, man, we're rolling. We're feeling good. We're confident. Who do we get next? And you look forward to the next game. When you start 6-13 and you're going bad, you know what it is? Man, we can't get out of this. This is killing us. And it becomes a mental grind, which J.D. Martinez himself admitted during the All-Star break. Eric's in Phoenix. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, Tony. That guy just kind of said what I was saying. You know, really doesn't matter what time of year. You're blowing games when your bullpen can't survive, right? The two innings, three innings, whatever it takes. And you're right. I mean, going back to the beginning of the year, I mean, I said, you know, I just didn't feel comfortable in April or May with these guys, the way they were performing. And you're right. You just can't just flip the switch. I mean, the Patriots, that's another story altogether with 16 games, and you got some room to make up in the AFC East, but not, you know, the New York and Houston are just too good to take a month and a half, 2 months off.
Yeah, and Eric, I would tell you, too, that, look, I don't like crossing sports. They're all different. I also don't want to compare anybody to the Patriots ever. They have the greatest coach and quarterback in the history of the game. They have had the greatest dynasty in the history of sports. They win in ways that other people can't. So let's not use them as some type of model for everyone else. The Patriots are an exception. They're not the rule. What bugs me in April is when people say, it's a long way to go, long way to go. You want to tell me they're 10-10 after 20 games and they're not playing great? Yeah, but they haven't buried themselves. Fine. That I'll buy into. I'd like to see them play better, but 10-10 isn't burying yourself. 6-13, that is burying yourself. And it can really set you back. And this April did. I just hate that whole mentality of, there's a long way to go. So the games don't count? Those April games don't mean anything.
And it's more than just, there's a long way to go. It's actually like tinged with anger that people like you or me might call them out for it. And we're, you're just so negative. Why are you always so negative? Why can't you just, I mean, it's only April. What's the big deal? You get on here and you're so negative. 6-13 is 6-13. Those are 13 losses that you're not going to get up anywhere. You're not going to make those up without expending a serious amount of energy. And even when you do that, it'll only get you back to even.
So, Marshall, let me tell you what the narrative is going to be in late September and October if they miss the playoffs. People are going to call and say, you know what? They get off to that horrible start. They weren't ready to go, and they never really get out of it. That's what they're going to say. But no one wanted to hear that at the time because there was too much time left. That's just, I hate that logic. The season starts when it starts. Time to go. Time to go to work. Time to win games. Jim's in a car. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. What was the front office thinking when they had this bullpen going into the season? Like, what was the mindset going in? I know we're just beating that horse over here, but what's the mindset going in? Like, what path to success they have with the bullpen going in, knowing that this is what it was going in.
Yeah, so Jim, look, you ask a very logical question. I mean, it's a very reasonable thing to answer. The Red Sox haven't really answered that. Clearly, what they have said is they believe in the guys they have, but I'll tell you what I think the logic was. Our offense is great. Our starting pitching is excellent. And you know what? Early in the year, our starters might not be ready to go, but that's okay because our offense is good enough to cover for it and we'll be okay. And then once our starters get going, we'll beat the crap out of teams. There's a lot of bad competition. We'll be so far ahead, it won't matter if we have a bad bullpen. And in the short term, Barnes and Brazier will be enough. Workman will help out. We'll be okay there. We have enough until the deadline, then we'll add and we'll be okay. They never thought it would blow up on them like they did. They never thought it would blow up on them the way it did. And so what happened? Well, their starting pitchers clearly weren't ready. They didn't hit in the early part of the year. They played terrible defense. They lost to bad teams. They got to 6-13. Their bullpen actually pitched well in the early part of the year, but they've had to lean on them so heavily because the starters have sucked that they ran the bullpen into the ground on top of the fact that it was already shorthanded. Everything went wrong. So last year for the Red Sox, nothing went wrong. This year, everything went wrong. And naturally, as usual, I got derailed. So Jay and Grafton, sit tight. I promise we'll get to the robot umpires next.
The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Sox come. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Maserati, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So, very interesting story last night, in case you missed it. I'm going to read it to you directly from the story I saw in the Washington Post. Jacob Bogage, I don't know, whatever.
We'll just call him Jake.
Jacob, the York, Pennsylvania, in the Washington Post this morning. Professional baseball allowed a glimpse at its future here Wednesday night for keen-eyed observers of home plate umpires' right ear and back pocket. A computer officially called balls and strikes for the first time in the game's history in the United States at a minor league all-star game. And it notes that Major League Baseball in February inked a three-year agreement with the independent eight-team Atlantic League to install experimental rules in line with Commissioner Rob Manfred's vision for a faster, more action-packed game. Among the first changes discussed was an automated balls and strikes regime run via a panel above home plate made by sports data firm TrackMan. After a half season of testing, the system was ready for the league all-star game, debuting with great fanfare and an unambiguous strike. Now, let me just say there's a picture accompanying the story of the home plate umpire, and you can see an AirPod in his right ear. So what the umpire had was basically headphones.
Yeah.
And he had a wireless device in his pocket telling him what the pitches were. So while the balls and strikes were called by machinery,
yep,
the umpire was still there telling you what the call was. Apparently, there was a little stretch in the middle of the game where the equipment failed. The umpire then took over. But the computer largely called the balls and strikes. And Jimmy Stewart, you said the Deadspin headline on the article indicated that the computer performed about as well as you'd expect an umpire to perform.
That is true.
Okay. So there was apparently one disputed call by the pitcher in the middle innings. But there are disputed calls when you have a human making the call. The point is, it was really no different, which I think is good. Okay, now, I am not in favor, I like having a person on the field. So this would not eliminate a person on the field. I have to say I'm kind of intrigued by the idea of the machinery calling the ball and strike.
I don't have a problem with it at all, and this is a change for me, because previously I'm like, robot umpires, that's ridiculous, human elements, part of the game, all of that. But ultimately, A, you still need to have the human there, even if it's not him calling, literally calling them, because there are plays at the plate, there are pass balls, sure. There's all of that other stuff that has nothing to do with balls and strikes. And even if the computer isn't perfect, it's at least consistent. And what is the most common complaint that you get from batters and pitchers from both sides, both teams, always is inconsistency. Not only...
And Marshall, that's true within a game and game to game.
Well, this is exactly what I was about to say. It can be true from one side to the other. Within a game, he started out doing one thing, he did something else. Yesterday, this was the strike zone. Today, this is the strike zone. And so I think what we have heard, you know, year after year is we as baseball players, both the hitters and the pitchers, we can deal with any strike zone, whatever it is. If it's big, it's small, it's high, it's low, we can deal with it. Just keep it the same. Let us know what it is, and then we can work within the literal and figurative confines of that. And that's what the computer strike zone does, is it sets a thing and then it's set. And then you've got the ump there for everything. So I don't think it removes completely the human element. It sounds like from this experiment, it wasn't 100% perfect either. So all of that is great. All of that is fine. And so I'm a convert. I would 100% go with this because I also think, you know, it eliminates some degree of umpires inserting themselves into a dynamic where they don't evolve, where they don't like this batter,
right.
They don't like this pitcher.
It takes
all of that out of it.
Right. It takes the person, right? People, because
yeah.
People screw up everything. So in that case, look, I'm intrigued by it. I want to take a couple calls, and then I want to get to some of the other details in the story. Jason Grafton, Jay, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I think it's a great idea. Maz, have you ever watched a tennis match?
Sure, of course.
They have automated umpires. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's seamless. It's instantaneous. Everyone in the audience can see it, and there's no dispute. I think Major League Baseball could do something along those lines. I'll hang up and listen to what you think.
Yeah, so look, it's a great idea. And again, I'm going to take a couple of other calls on this. We'll zip through them, and then we'll get to some of the other details in the story. Jay's in New Hampshire. Jay, go ahead.
Hey, Tony, thanks. Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I mean, it just leads to more consistency. You got people, you know, holding off on strikes right now, swinging at balls because they don't know where, you know, the pitch is going to go. This is just going to make more consistency, more action. And get the ump, you know, keep the ump behind the home plate for pass balls, but get them out of there for be the one to relay whether it's a ball or strike. Show it up on the screen. It's going to take a couple of seconds for them to think about it and relay every pitch. Shorten the game even more and take them out of that equation altogether.
Okay, so Jay, I don't think you lose a lot of time there, but fine. I mean, look, I like the idea. Have the umpire relay. You want to put it up on the board at the same time? That's fine, too. I don't have if the umpire can do it more quickly than the official scorer can, I'm for whatever's faster. Okay, but the pitcher is conditioned to looking in at the ump. So, you know, interestingly enough, it doesn't say in this story, the umpire had to relay the signs, though, because I don't think they put it up on the scoreboard. I'll take one more call quickly, and then I want to get to the details in the story. Dave's in a car. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, I don't know if this was brought up, but one of the things that I like the idea about is it takes the umpires out of the game who have to make the game all about them.
Yeah, so look, again, Marshall, I think, touched on that, as did one of the callers. And, you know, you eliminate the personality conflicts. Okay, you eliminate the personality conflicts. Now, some of the details in the story, there are a couple things that I will say critically, and I wouldn't call them criticisms of the game in Pennsylvania because I didn't see it. But the fact that MLB has an agreement with the Atlantic League to try out some of this stuff, I'm totally for. You need big picture evaluations of these things, big samples. What do you got, Jimmy?
Did you see that they're doing a try to steal first rule?
No. So there are some other rules in this. So, for example, the league is set to roll out the automated balls and strike system to each of its 8 ballparks in the coming weeks. They will also ban pickoff moves in which a pitcher remains on the rubber. I don't know what that one does. Expand the drop third strike rule to all counts, meaning anytime a strike is dropped, you can go. Allow bunting players to foul off a 2-strike pitch. There's one other thing here. Allow command umpires to rule on check swings in a batter-friendly manner. whatever that is. Okay, so there's some wacky stuff in here. But
stealing a first base sounds awesome.
Okay, so but the idea of this thing debuted in an all-star game in the Atlantic League, which again is an independent league. It's not affiliated with the minors at all. It's not a single A league or a double A league. It's an independent league. Right? Totally off the charts. Like, who played in the independent leagues? Kevin Millar, I think, played in the independent leagues. Okay, so like
Daniel Nava.
So some of these guys do. They pop out of leagues like that. But it's an independent league all-star game. Why not do it in the real all-star game? That's one of my, like, now look, I'm not saying the first time.
Well, and but maybe that's the point. Maybe they're going to get there. Maybe that's the last step before it actually becomes a thing. Like, they try it in the independent leagues. They move it into the minors. Then they say, hey, everybody, in the 2022 All-Star Game, here's what's coming next year. Here it is. So you all can get a look at it.
I mean, so look, Marshall, I just think that that's one of the things that they could do to really make, A, improve the All-Star Game.
I would watch the All-Star Game if there was stuff like that going on. Now, absolutely.
Now, maybe you wouldn't watch the whole thing, but I think the All-Star Game should be a laboratory for this sort of stuff. Okay, that's what I think. Let's get back to the calls here quickly. Aaron's in New Hampshire on the Red Sox. Hey, Aaron.
Hey, guys. Thank you, Tony, for answering the call. I just wanted to talk about the Red Sox starting pitching and where I think they're at. Personally, I think they should get rid of Rick Porcello. You know, he awful year so far. I mean, you look at...
So, Aaron, before you go into the particulars on Porcello, you would trade guys even with them in the playoff race?
Say it one more time?
You would trade guys even with them in the middle of the playoff race?
Yes.
Okay, why?
Right now, I would, yes.
Why?
Because, honestly, I think he sucks.
Okay, but...
Last year, you know, he had a great year. And, I mean, you look at the last two games, he's gone six innings, and he's given up 12 runs.
So you just don't like Porcello?
I used to like Porcello. You know, he great guy, great all-around guy.
Okay, but Aaron, my point is this. Are you making the trade because you don't like Porcello, or you don't think the Red Sox can win? Which one is it?
I don't think the Red Sox can win with Porcello.
Okay. Combination of the two. All right, so I got you. You don't think Porcello's helping the cause. You think they can still make the playoffs, but you might as well trade Porcello because he's not going to help you get there anyway. I was just trying to understand exactly why it was that you wanted to move Porcello. Okay? If you don't want to move Porcello because you don't like him, again, I would say, well, what if you don't like Bogaerts? You're going to trade him too? Like, so that's why I'm trying to understand your logic. Andrew on the Robot Umpires. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hey, I don't think robot umpires will make the game faster. I think you should allow everyone to take roids again.
Okay.
That makes the game go a lot faster.
Okay, so look, I don't know how steroids makes the game go faster, but nonetheless, is the objective with robot umpires, Marshall?
I don't think it's about speed. I don't think it's about speed at all. I think it's about consistency and the removal of that human element. Like, it won't make the game. I don't see how it makes the game go faster. Like, the thing slowing down the game is not the extra, I don't even know, 1 second that it takes a guy to go strike versus, you know, a computer just making a beep sound. So, no, I don't think it's about speed. I think it's about consistency.
Yeah, I don't think it's about speed either. And in fact, there's an element in this story in the Washington Post. Players, managers, and umpires in the Atlantic League have been quick to endorse the system in the name of consistency.
Oh, even, that sounds like a word I just used.
Even if the long-established boundaries of the strike zone change because of technology. The consensus among players and umpires who have tested it is that TrackMan squeezes the corners of the plate where human umpires might not and grants strikes higher and lower in the zone. Okay? So again, but the point is that those changes are consistent, that the strike zone is taller, but a little thinner. And if that is true, that it's the same every game, players would like that. I can tell you that players would like that. Because Marshall's right. The big complaint among players is the inconsistency from pitch to pitch, at bat to at bat, and then game to game. For example, we know that certain umps have big strike zones, certain umps have small strike zones. I'm sure there's data out there on ERAs and pitchers with certain guys on the mound. And so if you tell the hitters, no, it's basically going to be the same every game, well, the hitters would love that.
And I think the pitchers would too. I mean, maybe veteran pitchers who were able to get away with questionable calls and things like that, but that's the same for veteran hitters. Like, if I'm whoever who's been in this game forever and I walk up there against some rookie pitcher, well, then I'm probably going to get the benefit of the doubt on that call, and the same would be true in reverse. But I think whatever little bit of edge that gives you would be well, you know, they'd be willing to give that away for a consistent strike zone, game to game, at bat to at bat, again, both pitchers and hitters.
I mean, I'm telling you, I'm intrigued by the idea. I am. I'm intrigued by it. And if you haven't read the story, you should just Google it. You know, robot umpires, you get all kinds of stories pop up. You can read up on your own. Those are the high points. And I think that, honestly, to me, it's a good idea. The other thing is it possible that by freeing up the umpire, taking balls and strikes away, he can actually be more accurate on some of the other stuff? Like that, maybe he gets a fair foul call right down the line, or maybe he gets a bang-bang play at the plate right. And I know they have replay now, but I'd like to eliminate some of that. I don't know. We ask them to do a little bit less so they get better at the stuff they're doing. Quickly, DraftKings Fantasy Pick of the Night, brought to you by DraftKings. Play free fantasy baseball this season with the promo code BOSTON. When you make your first deposit on DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy baseball, again, the code BOSTON, minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Not many games in the major leagues tonight. There's one. So here you go. Hard to pick a true value pick with one game out there. But Michael Brantley, the cost on him is high. $10,800, but we're going to go with him anyway. 8 for his last 10, Brantley. 2 doubles and a homer, an OPS over 2,000. He's had a good month. He's hitting .351 in his last month with an OPS over 900. 2-7 off of Lance Lynn, whom he'll face tonight. He is your DraftKings fantasy pick of the game.
The Baseball Reporters on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.